Old friend, I hope this missive finds you well. Though as you are now essentially immortal, I would guess that wellness on your part is something of a given.
King Elikar rode beneath the bright open sky.
It's an excellent day to slay a god, wouldn't you say?
Undoubtedly, your majesty. One might say that the gods, as a rule, should fear the Alethid ability. Most of us, at least.
Adolin gripped his reins a little more tightly. It put him on edge every time High Prince Sadeus spoke.
Do we have to ride up here at the front?
I want to listen.
Adolin and his brother Renarin rode near the front of the column, near the king and his high princes. Behind them extended a grand procession. 1,000 soldiers in Colin blue, dozens of servants, and even women in palanquins to scribe accounts of the hunt. Adolin glanced at them all as he reached for his canteen. He was wearing his shard plate, and so he had to be careful when grabbing it, lest he crush it. One's muscles reacted with increased speed, strength, and dexterity when wearing the armor, and it took practice to use it correctly. Adolin was still occasionally caught by surprise, though he'd held this suit, inherited from his mother's side of the family, since his 16th birthday. That was now 7 years past. Sadeus rode to the king's left, and Dalinar, Adolin's father, was a solid figure riding at the king's right. The final high prince on the hunt was Vama, who wasn't a shard-bearer. The king was resplendent in his golden shard plate, of course. Plate could make any man look regal. Even Sadeus looked impressive when wearing his red plate, though his bulbous face and ruddy complexion weakened the effect. Sadeus and the king flaunted their plate, and, well, perhaps Adolin did too. He'd had his painted blue, a few ornamentations welded onto the helm, and pauldrons to give an extra look of danger. How could you not show off when wearing something as grand as shard plate? Adolin listened to the king talk about his excitement for the hunt. Only one shard-bearer in the procession, indeed only one shard-bearer in the entirety of the 10 armies, used no paint or ornamentations on his plate. Dalinar Colin. Adolin's father preferred to leave his armor its natural slate-gray color. Dalinar rode beside the king, his face somber. He rode with his helm tied to his saddle, exposing a square face topped by short black hair that had gone white at the temples. Few women had ever called Dalinar Colin handsome. His nose was the wrong shape, his features blocky rather than delicate. It was the face of a warrior. He rode astride a massive black Rashadium stallion, one of the largest horses that Adolin had ever seen. And while the king and Sadeus looked regal in their armor, somehow Dalinar managed to look like a soldier. To him, the plate was not an ornament, it was a tool. He never seemed to be surprised by the strength or speed the armor lent him. It was as if, for Dalinar Colin, wearing his plate was his natural state. It was the times without that were abnormal. Perhaps that was one reason he'd earned the reputation of being one of the greatest warriors and generals who ever lived. Adolin found himself wishing, passionately, that his father would do a little more these days to live up to that reputation.
He's thinking about the visions.
Adolin regarded his father's distant expression and troubled eyes.
It happened again last night, during the high storm.
I know.
Renarin always paused before he replied to a question, as if testing the words in his mind. Some women, Adolin knew, said Renarin's ways made them feel as if he were dissecting them with his mind. They'd shiver when they spoke of him, although Adolin had never found his younger brother the least bit discomforting.
What do you think they mean? Father's episodes?
I don't know.
Renarin, we can't keep ignoring them. The soldiers are talking. Rumors are spreading through all 10 armies.
Dalinar Colin was going mad. Whenever a high storm came, he fell to the floor and began to shake. Then he began raving in gibberish. Often, he'd stand, blue eyes delusional and wild, swinging and flailing. Adolin had to restrain him lest he hurt himself or others.
He sees things. Or thinks he does.
Adolin's grandfather had suffered from delusions. When he'd grown old, he'd thought he was back at war. Was that what happened to Dalinar? He was reliving his youthful battle days when he'd earned his renown? Or was it that terrible night he saw over and over, the night when his brother had been murdered by the assassin in white? And why did he so often mention the Knights Radiant soon after his episodes? It all made Adolin feel sick. Dalinar was the Black Thorn, a genius of the battlefield and a living legend. Together, he and his brother had reunited Alethkar's warring High Princes after centuries of strife. He had defeated countless challengers in duels, had won dozens of battles. The entire kingdom looked up to him. And now this.
What do I do as a son when the man I love, the greatest man alive, starts to lose his wits?
Sadeas was speaking about a recent victory. He'd won another gem heart 2 days back, and the king, it appeared, hadn't heard of it. Adolin tensed at the boasts.
We should move to the back.
We are of rank enough to be here.
I don't like how you get when you're around Sadeas.
He knows father is weakening. He'll try to strike.
Adolin forced himself to smile, however. He tried to be relaxed and confident for Renarin. Generally, that wasn't difficult. He'd happily spent his entire life dueling, lounging, and courting the occasional pretty girl. Of late, however, life didn't seem content to let him enjoy its simple pleasures.
You're a model of courage lately, Sadeas. You've done very well in capturing gem hearts. You are to be commended.
Thank you, Your Majesty. Though the competition grows unexciting, as some people don't seem interested in participating. I guess even the best weapons eventually grow dull.
Dalinar, who might once have responded to the veiled slur, said nothing. Adolin gritted his teeth. It was flat-out unconscionable for Sadeas to be taking shots at his father in his present state.
Perhaps I should offer the pompous bastard a challenge.
You didn't duel, High Princes. It just wasn't done. Not unless you were ready to make a big storm of it. But maybe he was.
Maybe.
Adolin?
Adolin looked to the side. He'd held out his hand as if to summon his blade. He picked up his reins with the hand instead.
Storming man, leave my father alone.
Why don't we talk about the hunt?
As usual, the younger Colin rode with a straight back and perfect posture, eyes hidden behind his spectacles, a model of propriety and solemnity.
Aren't you excited?
Bah, I never find hunts as interesting as everyone says they're going to be. I don't care how big the beast is. In the end, it's really just butchery.
Now, dueling, that was exciting. The feel of the shard blade in your hand, of facing someone crafty, skilled, and careful.
Man against man. Strength against strength. Mind against mind. Hunting some dumb beast. This can't compare to that.
Maybe you should have invited Yanala along.
She wouldn't have come. Not after... Well, you know. Rilla was very vocal yesterday. It was best to just leave.
You really should have been wiser in your treatment of her.
It wasn't his fault that his relationships often burned out quickly. Well, technically, this time it was his fault. But it wasn't usually. This was just an oddity. The king began complaining about something. Renarin and Adolin had lagged behind, and Adolin couldn't hear what was being said.
Let's ride up closer.
Renarin rolled his eyes, but followed.
Unite them.
The words whispered in Dalinar's mind. He couldn't rid himself of them. They consumed him as he trotted gallant across a rocky, boulder-strewn plateau on the shattered plains.
Shouldn't we be there by now?
We're still 2 or 3 plateaus away from the hunting site, Your Majesty. It would be another hour, perhaps, observing proper protocols. If we had vantage, we could probably see the pavilion to...
Vantage? Would that rock formation up ahead do?
I suppose. We could send scouts to check.
Scouts? No. I need a run, Uncle. I'll bet you 5 full bromes that I can beat you to the top.
The king galloped away, leaving behind a shocked group of light eyes, attendants, and guards.
Storm it! Adolin, you have command. Secure the next plateau, just in case.
His son, who had been lagging behind, nodded sharply. Dalinar galloped after the king, a figure in golden armor and a long blue cape. Ahead, the steep, spike-like spire of rock rose from the lip of the plateau. Such formations were common out here on the shattered plains.
Curse that boy!
Dalinar still thought of Alethkar as a boy, though the king was in his 27th year, but sometimes he acted like a boy.
Why couldn't he give more warning before leaping into one of these stunts?
Still, as Dalinar rode, he admitted to himself that it did feel good to charge freely, helm off, face to the wind. His pulse picked up as he got into the race, and he forgave its impetuous beginning. For the moment, Dalinar let himself forget his troubles and the words that had been echoing in his head.
So, the king wants a race. Well, I will give him one.
He charged past the king. Helicar's stallion was a good breed, but it could never match Gallant, who was a full Rashadian, 2 hands taller and much stronger than an ordinary horse. The animals chose their own riders, and only a dozen men in all of the war camps were so fortunate. Dalinar was one, Adolin another. In seconds, Dalinar reached the formation's base. He threw himself from the saddle while Gallant was still moving. He hit hard, but the shard plate absorbed the impact. Men who hadn't ever worn plate, particularly those who were accustomed to its inferior cousin, simple plate and mail, could never understand. Shard plate wasn't merely armor. It was so much more. He ran to the bottom of the rock formation as Elikar galloped up behind. Dalinar leaped, plate-assisted legs propelling him up some 8 feet, and grabbed a handhold in the stone. He pulled himself up, the plate lending him the strength of many men. The thrill of contest began to rise within him. It wasn't nearly as keen as the thrill of battle, but it was a worthy substitute. Elikar had begun to climb as well. Dalinar didn't look down. He kept his eyes fixed on the small natural platform at the top of the 40-foot-high formation. He groped with steel-covered fingers, finding another handhold. The gauntlets covered his hands, but the ancient armor somehow transferred sensation to his fingers. It was as if he were wearing thin leather gloves. Elikar had taken a different path, hoping to pass Dalinar, but the king had found himself at a section without handholds above. His progress was stalled. The king's golden shard plate glittered as he glanced at Dalinar. Elikar set his jaw and looked upward, then launched himself in a powerful leap toward an outcropping.
Fool boy!
Dalinar watched the king seem to hang in the air for a moment before he snatched the projecting rock and dangled. Then the king pulled himself up and continued to climb. Dalinar moved furiously. The wind ruffled his cape. He managed to get just ahead of the king. The top was mere feet away. The thrill sang at him. He reached for the gold, determined to win.
I can't lose. I have to...
unite them.
Dalinar hesitated, not quite certain why, and let his nephew get ahead. Elikar hauled himself to his feet atop the rock formation. He turned toward Dalinar, holding out a hand.
Stormwind's uncle, but you made a fine race of it. At the end there, I thought for sure you had me.
The triumph and joy in Elikar's face brought a smile to Dalinar's lips. The younger man needed victories these days. Even little ones would do him good. Glory Spren, like tiny golden translucent globes of light, began to pop into existence around him, attracted by his sense of accomplishment. Blessing himself for hesitating, Dalinar took the king's hand, letting Elikar pull him up. There was just enough room on top of the natural tower for them both.
That was a fine contest, Your Majesty, and you played it very well.
The king beamed. His golden shard plate gleamed in the noonday sun. He had his faceplate up, revealing light yellow eyes, a strong nose, and a clean-shaven face that was almost too handsome, with its full lips, broad forehead, and firm chin. Gavilar had looked like that, too, before he'd suffered a broken nose and that terrible scar in his chin. Below them, the Kobold Guard and some of Elikar's attendants rode up, including Sadius. His plate gleamed red, though he wasn't a full shard-bearer. He had only the plate, not the blade. Dalinar looked up. From this height, he could scan a large swath of the shattered plains, and he had an odd moment of familiarity. He felt as if he'd been atop this vantage point before, looking down at a broken landscape. The moment was gone in a heartbeat.
There. I can see our destination.
Dalinar shaded his eyes, picking out a large cloth pavilion 3 plateaus away, flying the king's flag. Wide, permanent bridges led there. They were relatively close to the Alethi side of the shattered plains, on plateaus Dalinar himself maintained. A fully grown chasm fiend living here was his to hunt. The wealth at its heart, his privilege to claim.
You are correct again, Uncle.
I try to make a habit of it.
Can't blame you for that, I suppose. Though I can beat you at a race now and then.
I felt like a youth again, chasing after your father in some ridiculous challenge.
Alucard's lips tightened to a thin line, and the glory spren faded away. Mentioning Gavilar soured him. He felt others compared him unfavorably to the old king. Unfortunately, he was often right.
Oh, we must have seen another 10 fools charging away like that. I do wish you'd give me more notice to prepare your honor guard. This is a war zone.
You worry too much, Uncle. The Parshendi haven't attacked this close to our side of the plains in years.
Well, you seemed worried about your safety 2 nights ago.
How many times must I explain this to you, Uncle? I can face enemy soldiers with blade in hand. It's what they might send when they're not looking. When all is dark and quiet that you should be trying to protect me from.
Dalinar didn't reply. Alucard's nervousness, paranoia even, regarding assassination was strong. But who could blame him, considering what had happened to his father?
I'm sorry.
He echoed that sentiment every time he thought of the night when Gavilar had died, alone, without his brother to protect him.
I looked into the matter you asked me about.
You did? What did you discover?
Well, not much, I'm afraid. There were no traces of trespassers on your balcony, and none of the servants reported any strangers in the area.
There was someone watching me in the darkness that night.
If so, they haven't returned, Your Majesty, and they left no clues behind.
Alucard seemed dissatisfied, and the silence between them grew stark. Below, Adolin met with scouts and prepared for the troops crossing. Alucard had protested at how many men Dalinar had brought. Most of them wouldn't be needed on the hunt. The shard-bearers, not the soldiers, would slay the beast. But Dalinar would see his nephew protected. Parshendi raids had grown less bold during the years of fighting. Alethi scribes guessed their numbers were a quarter their prior strength, though it was difficult to judge. But the king's presence might be enough to entice them into a reckless attack. The winds blew across Dalinar, returning with them that faint familiarity he'd felt a few minutes before. Standing atop a peak, looking out at desolation, a sense of an awful and amazing perspective.
That's it. I did stand atop a formation like this. It happened during...
during one of his visions. The very first one.
You must unite them. You must prepare. Build of your people a fortress of strength and peace. A wall to resist the winds. Cease squabbling and unite. The Everstorm comes.
Your Majesty, I...
What could he say? That he'd seen visions? That, in defiance of all doctrine and common sense, he thought those visions might be from the Almighty?
That I think we should withdraw from the battlefield and go back to Alethkar? Pure foolishness.
Uncle, what do you want?
Nothing. Come, let's get back to the others.
Adolin twisted one of his hogshide reins around his finger while he sat astride his horse, awaiting the next batch of scout reports. He'd managed to get his mind off his father and Sadeus, and was instead contemplating just how he was going to explain his falling out with Rilla in a way that would earn him some sympathy with Yanala. Yanala loved ancient epic poems. Could he phrase the falling out in dramatic terms? He smiled, thinking of her luxurious black hair and sly smile. She'd been daring, teasing at him while he was known to be courting someone else. He could use that, too.
Maybe Renarin was right. Perhaps I should have invited her on the hunt.
The prospect of fighting a great shell would have been far more interesting to him if someone beautiful and long-haired were watching. Terralar jogged up.
New scout reports are in, Bright Lord Adolin.
Adolin turned his mind back to business. He'd taken up position with some members of the Cobalt Guard beside the base of the high rock formation, where his father and the king were still conversing. Terralar, scout lord, was a gaunt-faced man with a thick chest and arms. From some angles, his head looked so relatively small on his body that it appeared to have been smashed.
Proceed. Advance runners have met with the lead huntmaster and have returned. There are no sightings of Parshendi on any nearby plateaus. Companies 18 and 21 are in position. though there are still 8 companies to go.
Have Company 21 send some outriders to watch from Plateaus 14 and 16. And 2 each on Plateaus 6 and 8.
6 and 8? Behind us?
If I were going to ambush the party, I'd round back this way and cut us off from fleeing. Do it.
Yes, Bright Lord.
You really think that's necessary?
No. But Father will want it done anyway. You know he will.
There was motion up above. Adolin looked up just in time to see the king leap off the rock formation, cape streaming behind him as he fell some 40 feet to the rock floor. Adolin's father stood at the lip above, and Adolin could imagine him cursing to himself at what he saw as a foolhardy move. Shardplate could withstand a fall that far, but it was high enough to be dangerous. Adolin's father took a safer way down, descending to a lower ledge before jumping.
He seems to take the safer pathway more and more often lately. And he often seems to find reasons to give me command as well.
Thoughtful, Adolin trotted his horse out of the shadow of the rock formation. He needed to get a report from the rear guard. His father would want to hear it. His path took him past a group of light eyes from Sadius's party. The king, Sadius, and Vama each had a collection of attendants, aides, and sycophants accompanying them. Looking at them riding in their comfortable silks, open-fronted jackets, and shade-covered palanquins made Adolin aware of his sweaty, bulky armor. Shardplate was wonderful and empowering, but beneath the hot sun, it could still leave a man wishing for something less confining. But, of course, he couldn't have worn casual clothing like the others. Adolin was to be in uniform, even on a hunt. The Alethi war codes commanded it. Never mind that nobody had followed those codes in centuries, or at least nobody but Dalinar Kalin, and, by extension, his sons. Adolin passed a pair of lounging light eyes, Bartian and Lamard, two of Sadius's recent hangers-on. They were talking loudly enough that Adolin could hear, probably on purpose.
Chasing after the king again. Like pet axe hounds nipping at their master's heels.
Shameful. How long has it been since Dalinar won a Gemhard? The only time he can get one is when the king lets them hunt it without competition.
Adolin set his jaw and rode on. His father's interpretation of the codes wouldn't let Adolin challenge a man to a duel while he was on duty or in command. He chafed at the needless restrictions, but Dalinar had spoken as Adolin's commanding officer. That meant there was no room for argument. He'd have to find a way to duel the two idiot sycophants in another setting, put them in their places. Unfortunately, he couldn't duel everyone who spoke out against his father. The biggest problem was the things they said had some real truth to them. The Alethi princedoms were like kingdoms unto themselves, still mostly autonomous despite having accepted Gavilar as king. Elikar had inherited the throne, and Dalinar by right had taken the Kalin princedom as his own. However, most of the high princes gave only token nods to the paramount rule of the king. That left Elikar without land that was specifically his own. He tended to act like a high prince of the Kalin princedom, taking great interest in its day-to-day management. So, while Dalinar should have been a ruler unto himself, he instead bent to Elikar's whims and dedicated his resources to protecting his nephew. That made him weak in the eyes of the others, nothing more than a glorified bodyguard. Once, when Dalinar had been feared, men had not dared whisper about these things. But now, Dalinar went on fewer and fewer plateau assaults, and his forces lagged behind in capturing precious gem hearts. While the others fought and won, Dalinar and his sons spent their time in bureaucratic administration. Adolin wanted to be out there fighting, killing Parshendi.
What is the good of following the codes of war when I rarely get to go to war? The fault of those delusions. Dalinar wasn't weak, and he certainly wasn't a coward, no matter what people said. He was just troubled.
The rearguard captains weren't formed up yet, so Adolin decided to give the king a report instead. He trotted up toward the king, joining Sadius, who was doing the same. Not unexpectedly, Sadius frowned at him. The High Prince hated that Adolin had a blade, while Sadius had none. He had coveted one for years now. Adolin met the High Prince's eyes, smiling.
Any time you want to duel me for my blade, Sadius, go ahead and try.
Oh, what I wouldn't do to get you, you eel of a man in the dueling ring.
Your Majesty, I have scout reports.
More of nothing, I expect. Honestly, Uncle, must we have a report on every little detail of the army?
We are at war, Your Majesty.
You're a strange man, cousin.
Elikar saw murderers in every shadow, yet often dismissed the Parshendi threat. He'd go charging off like he had today with no honor guard and would leap off a 40-foot-tall rock formation. Yet he'd stay up nights terrified of assassination.
Give your report, son. The scouts have seen no sign of Parshendi. They've met with the Huntmaster. Two companies have secured the next plateau, the other eight will need some time to cross. We're close, though.
Yes, we saw from above. Perhaps a few of us could ride ahead.
Your Majesty, the point of bringing my troops along would be somewhat undermined if you left them behind.
Elikar rolled his eyes. Dalinar did not yield, his expression as immobile as the rocks around them. Seeing him like that, firm, unyielding before a challenge, made Adolin smile with pride.
Why can't he be like this all of the time? Why does he back down so often before insults or challenges?
Very well. We'll take a break and wait while the army crosses.
The king's attendants responded immediately, men climbing off horses, women having their palanquin bearers set them down. Adolin moved off to get that rearguard report. By the time he returned, Elikar was practically holding court. His servants had set up a small awning to give him shade, and others served wine, chilled, using one of the new fabrials that could make things cold. Adolin removed his helm and wiped his brow with his saddle rag, again wishing he could join the others and enjoy a little wine. Instead, he climbed down from his horse and went looking for his father. Dalinar stood outside the awning, gauntleted hands clasped behind his back, looking eastward toward the origin, the distant, the unseen place where high storms began. Renarin stood at his side, looking out as well, as if trying to see what it was that his father found so interesting. Adolin rested a hand on his brother's shoulder, and Renarin smiled at him. Adolin knew that his brother, now 19 years old, felt out of place. Though he wore a side sword, he barely knew how to use it. His blood weakness made it difficult for him to spend any reasonable amount of time practicing.
Father, maybe the king was right. Perhaps we should have moved on quickly. I'd rather have this entire hunt over with.
When I was your age, I looked forward to a hunt like this. Taking down a great shell was the highlight of a young man's year.
Not this again.
Why was everyone so offended that he didn't find hunts exciting?
It's just an oversized chull, Father.
These oversized chulls grow to 50 feet tall and are capable of crushing even a man in shard plate.
Yes, and so we'll bait it for hours while baking in the hot sun. If it decides to show up, we'll pelt it with arrows, only closing in once it's so weak it can barely resist as we hack it to death with shard blades. Very honorable.
It's not a duel, it's a hunt. A grand tradition. And yes, it can be tedious. But the king was insistent.
You're just still smarting over the problems with Rilla, Adolin. You were eager a week ago. You really should have invited Yanala.
Yanala hates hunts. Thinks they're barbarous.
Yanala? Who's Yanala?
Daughter of Bright Lord Lusto.
And you're courting her?
Not yet, but I've sure been trying.
And what happened to that other girl? The short one with the fondness for silver hair ribbons.
Deely? Father, I stopped courting her over 2 months back.
You did?
Yes.
Dalinar rubbed his chin.
There have been two between her and Yanala, Father. You really need to pay more attention.
Almighty help any man who tries to keep track of your tangled courtship, son.
The most recent was Rilla.
And you two...
had some problems yesterday. Anyway, don't you find it odd that the king would insist on coming to hunt the Chasm Fiend himself?
Not particularly. It isn't often that a full-sized one makes its way out here, and the king rarely gets to go on plateau runs. This is a way for him to fight.
But he's so paranoid. Why does he now want to go and hunt, exposing himself on the plains?
I know he seems odd, son, but the king is more complex a man than many give him credit for being. He worries that his subjects see him as a coward because of how much he fears assassins. And so he finds ways to prove his courage. Foolish ways, sometimes. But he's not the first man I've known who will face battle without fear, yet cower in terror about knives in the shadows. The hallmark of insecurity is bravado. The king is learning to lead. He needs this hunt. He needs to prove himself, and to others, that he's still strong and worthy to command a kingdom at war. That's why I encouraged him. A successful hunt under controlled circumstances could bolster his reputation and his confidence.
Adolin slowly closed his mouth, his father's words cutting down his complaints. Strange how much the king's actions made sense when explained that way. Adolin looked up at his father.
How can the others whisper that he's a coward? Can't they see his wisdom?
Yes, your nephew is a better man than many think him, and a stronger king. At least he could be. I just have to figure out how to persuade him to leave the Shattered Plains.
What?
I didn't understand at first. Unite them. I'm supposed to unite them, but aren't they already united? We fight together here on the Shattered Plains. We have a common enemy in the Parshendi. I'm beginning to see that we're united only in name. The High Princes give lip service to Elikar, but this war, this siege, is a game to them, a competition against one another. We can't unite them here. We need to return to Alethkar and stabilize our homeland. Learn how to work together as one nation. The Shattered Plains divide us. The others worry too much about winning wealth and prestige.
Wealth and prestige are what being a Lethi is about, Father. What of the Vengeance Pact? The High Princes vowed to seek retribution upon the Parshendi.
And we have sought it. I realize that it sounds terrible, son. But some things are more important than vengeance. I loved Gavilar. I miss him fiercely, and I hate the Parshendi for what they did. But Gavilar's life work was to unite Alethkar, and I'll go to damnation before I let it break apart.
Father, if there's something wrong here, it's that we're not trying hard enough. You think the High Princes are playing games? Well, show them the way it should be done. Instead of talking retreat, we should be talking of advancing, striking at the Parshendi, instead of besieging them.
Perhaps.
Either way, we cannot speak of withdrawing. You haven't brought this up with the king, have you?
Not yet. I haven't found the right way.
Well, please, don't talk to him about it.
Well, we shall see.
Dalinar turned back toward the Shattered Plains, his eyes growing distant again.
Father...
You've made your point, son, and I've replied to it. Do not press the issue. Have you gotten the report from the rear guard?
Yes.
What of the vanguard?
I just checked with them and...
Last.
It had been long enough that it was probably time to move the king's party onward. The last of the army couldn't leave this plateau until the king was safely on the other side. Adolin went off to collect the report. Before long, they were all across the chasm and riding over the next plateau. Renarin trotted up to Adolin and tried to engage him in conversation, but Adolin gave only half-hearted replies. He was beginning to feel an odd longing. Most of the older men in the army, even those only a few years older than Adolin, had fought alongside his father during the glory days. Adolin found himself jealous of all those men who had known his father and had seen him fight when he hadn't been so wrapped up in the codes. The changes in Dalinar had begun with the death of his brother. That terrible day was when everything had started to go wrong. The loss of Gavilar had nearly crushed Dalinar, and Adolin would never forgive the Parshendi for bringing his father such pain. Never. Men fought on the plains for different reasons, but this was why Adolin had come. Perhaps if they beat the Parshendi, his father would go back to the man he had been. Perhaps those ghostly delusions that haunted him would vanish. Ahead, Dalinar was speaking quietly with Sadeus. Both men wore frowns. They barely tolerated one another, though they had once been friends. That had also changed the night of Gavilar's death. What had happened between them? The day wore on, and they eventually arrived at the hunt site, a pair of plateaus, one where the creature would be lured up to attack, and another one, a safe distance away, for those who would watch. Like most others, these plateaus had an uneven surface inhabited by hardy plants adapted to regular storm exposure. Rocky shelves, depressions, and uneven footing made fighting on them treacherous. Adolin joined his father, who waited beside the final bridge as the king moved over onto the viewing plateau, followed by a company of soldiers. The attendants would be next.
You're doing well with your command, son.
They're good men, father. They hardly need someone to command them during a march from plateau to plateau.
Yes, but you need experience leading, and they need to learn to see you as a commander.
Renarin trotted up to them on his horse. It was probably time to cross to the viewing plateau. Dalinar nodded for his sons to go first. Adolin turned to go, but hesitated as he noticed something on the plateau behind them. A rider moving quickly to catch up with the hunting party, coming from the direction of the war camps.
Father!
Dalinar turned immediately, following the gesture. However, Adolin soon recognized the newcomer. Not a messenger as he'd expected.
Wit!
The newcomer trotted up to them. Tall and thin, the king's wit rode easily on a black gelding. He wore a stiff black coat and black trousers, a color matched by his deep onyx hair. Though he wore a long, thin sword tied to his waist, as far as Adolin knew, the man had never drawn it. A dueling foil rather than a military blade. It was mostly symbolic. Wit nodded to them, wearing one of those keen smiles of his. He had blue eyes, but he wasn't really a light eyes, nor was he a dark eyes. He was, well, he was the king's wit. That was a category all its own.
Ah, young Prince Adolin, you actually managed to pry yourself away from the camp's young women long enough to join this hunt? I'm impressed.
Well, that's been a topic of some discussion lately.
Wit raised an eyebrow. He would find out eventually anyway. It was virtually impossible to keep anything from the man.
I made a lunch appointment with one woman yesterday, but I was... Well, I was courting another, and she's the jealous type. So now neither will speak with me.
It's a constant source of amazement that you get yourself into such messes, Adolin. Each one is more exciting than the previous.
Yes, exciting. That's exactly how it feels.
The king's wit was not a silly court fool such as one might find in other kingdoms. He was a sword, a tool maintained by the king. Insulting others was beneath the dignity of the king, so just as one used gloves when forced to handle something vile, the king retained a wit, so he didn't have to debase himself to the level of rudeness or offensiveness. This new wit had been with them for some months, and there was something different about him. He seemed to know things that he shouldn't. Important things. Useful things. Wit nodded to Dalinar.
Your lordship.
Wit.
And young Prince Renarin.
Renarin kept his eyes down.
No greeting for me, Renarin?
Renarin said nothing.
He thinks you'll mock him if he speaks to you, Wit. Earlier this morning, he told me he'd determined not to say anything around you.
Wonderful! Then I can say whatever I wish, and he'll not object.
Renarin hesitated. Wit leaned in to Adolin.
Have I told you about the night Prince Renarin and I had 2 days back, walking the streets of the war camp? We came across these two sisters, you see. Blue-eyed and...
That's a lie!
Very well, I'll confess there were actually 3 sisters. But Prince Renarin quite unfairly ended up with 2 of them, and I didn't wish to diminish my reputation, but...
Wit! Perhaps you should restrict your mockery to those who deserve it.
Bright Lord Dalinar, I believe that's what I was doing.
Dalinar's frown deepened. He never had liked Wit, and picking on Renarin was a sure way to raise his ire. Adolin could understand that, but Wit was almost always good-natured with Renarin. Wit moved to leave, passing Dalinar as he did. Wit leaned over.
Those who deserve my mockery are those who can benefit from it, Bright Lord Dalinar. That one is less fragile than you think him.
He winked, then turned his horse to move on over the bridge.
Storm winds, but I like that man. Best wit we've had in ages.
I find him unnerving.
But that's half the fun.
Dalinar said nothing. The 3 of them crossed the bridge, passing Wit, who had stopped to torment a group of officers. Light eyes of low enough rank that they needed to serve in the army and earn a wage. Wit poked fun at one of them. The 3 of them joined the king and were immediately approached by the day's huntmaster, Bashan. Bashan was a short man with a sizable paunch. He wore rugged clothing with a leather overcoat and a wide-brimmed hat. He was a Dark Eyes of the First Nun, the highest and most prestigious rank a Dark Eyes could have, worthy even of marrying into a light-eyed family.
Your Majesty, wonderful timing. We've just tossed down the bait.
Excellent.
How long will it take?
2 or 3 hours is likely. We've set up over there.
Bashan pointed toward the hunting plateau, the smaller plateau where the actual fighting would take place away from the attendants and the bulk of the soldiers. A group of hunters led a lumbering chull around its perimeter, towing a rope draped over the side of the cliff. That rope would be dragging the bait.
We're using hog carcasses, and we poured hog's blood over the sides. The chasm fiend has been spotted by patrols here a good dozen times. He's got his nest nearby for certain. He's not here to pupate. He's too big for that. And he's remained in the area too long. So it should be a fine hunt. Once he arrives, we'll loose a group of wild hogs as distractions, and you can begin weakening him with arrows.
They had brought grand bows, large steel bows with thick strings and such a high draw weight that only a shard bearer could use them to fire shafts as thick as three fingers. There were recent creations devised by Alethi engineers through the use of fabrial science, and each required a small infused gemstone to maintain the strength of its pull without warping the metal. Adolin's aunt Navani, the widow of King Gavilar, mother of Elikar and his sister Yasna, had led the research to develop the bows.
Would be nice if she hadn't left.
Navani was an interesting woman. Things were never boring around her. Some had started calling the bows shard bows, but Adolin didn't like the term. Shard blades and shard plate were something special, relics from another time, a time when the Radiance had walked Roshar. No amount of fabrial science had even approached recreating them. Bashan led the king and his high princes toward a pavilion at the center of the viewing plateau. Adolin joined his father, intending to give a report on the crossing. About half of the soldiers were in place, but many of the attendants were still making their way across the large, permanent bridge onto the viewing plateau. The king's banner flapped above the pavilion, and a small refreshment stand had been erected. A soldier at the back was setting up the rack of four grand bows. They were sleek and dangerous-looking, with thick shafts and four quivers beside them.
I think you'll have a fine day for the hunt. Judging by reports, the beast is a big one. Larger than you've ever slain before, Bright Lord.
Gavilar always wanted to slay one of these. He loved great shell hunts, though he never got a chasm fiend. Odd that now I've killed so many.
You need to go for the legs on this one, Bright Lords.
Pre-hunt advice was one of Bashan's responsibilities, and he took those seriously.
Chasm fiends? Well, you're used to attacking them in their chrysalises. Don't forget how mean they are when they're not pupating. With one this big, use a distraction and come in from... Storms take that animal! I swear, the man who trained it must have been daft!
Bashan looked across at the next plateau. Adolin followed his glance. The crab-like chull that had been towing the bait was lumbering away from the chasm with a slow yet determined gait. Its handlers were running after it.
I'm sorry, Bright Lord. It's been doing this all day.
Something seemed wrong to Adolin.
We can send for another one. It shouldn't take too long.
Bashan, shouldn't there be bait on the end of that beast's rope?
The huntmaster froze. The rope the chull was towing was frayed at the end. Something dark, something mind-numbingly enormous, rose out of the cabin on thick chitinous legs. It climbed onto the plateau, not the small plateau where the hunt was supposed to take place, but the viewing plateau where Dalinar and Adolin stood. The plateau filled with attendants, unarmed guests, female scribes, and unprepared soldiers.
Oh, damnation!